WordPress has been around for a while now, and it has seen so many changes over this period. How has WordPress landscape changed with regard to building websites, tools we use, client expectations, features, and more? Pete Everett shares his WordPress journey and changes he has seen while building websites and creating other useful products in this ecosystem. So let's welcome Pete on the show and get started.
Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
Hi, Davinder. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Awesome. So let's dig into the WordPress history and your journey with WordPress. But before we do that, why don't you give a quick introduction about your online life?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so my name's Pete, as you said. I live in Sheffield in the UK, and I run a digital agency here. I also host my own podcast called the Marketing Development Podcast. And off the back of that, I've launched some online resources through what I call the Marketing Development Academy. So it all kind of fits together nicely in one sort of brand, if you like. I started back with WordPress, actually. I started long before I did any kind of training or any commerce or anything like that. But when I was a school kid, WordPress was just on the horizon. I mean, we were talking like version one. Right back at the very start. This was where WordPress was literally just a blog. If you wanted it to show a page that wasn't a post, you had to technically break it in order to get it to show something static. So some friends and I used to, I was kind of one of the geeky kids at school. We used to have house parties where we'd all take our computers and LAN them together and then start building stuff in WordPress. And then chucking it up online. It was quicker to do it that way because at that time we were using dial-up. So, yeah. So I started right back there. Then I went to university, got a job doing something completely different. I got married and our life sort of scenario meant that I just went and got a job at the time. And as time went by and I managed to start to specialize into what I wanted to do, websites then came more of my sort of forte, if you like. I started working at a number of design agencies. I was a web developer there. And through that experience, I then started learning a bit more about marketing strategy. And what really floated my boat, or still floats my boat, is being able to think a bit more creatively. So not just taking a picture and making it work, and any designer that's listening will just hate me for saying that, but not just taking what's on the page and simply replicating it in code, but actually thinking a little bit more broadly about what are the tools, how can we make this thing convert, what is the client trying to achieve, where's the added value that we can put into this. Some of the geeky stuff as well. So, you know, when pre-processors and SaaS and all that kind of stuff, you know, being able to play with that kind of thing, that turns the geeky side of it on. But actually starting to think about, in a real world case, how can we make this website do more than just be a picture online? So that's that then led into other jobs. I was a freelancer for a while. I got headhunted for a job. And about 3 years ago, just over 3 years ago, I set up So Digital Communications, which is, I'm in my office right now. I know that looks like a wardrobe behind me, but I am actually in an office. It's an old Victorian house here in the UK, and there's a fitted cupboard behind me. So yeah, so that's basically it in a nutshell.
Cool. So when you started, you know, your website building with WordPress, like around 2000, 2005, how was it like working with WordPress and how it improved or changed, like, 5 or 10 years down the line since then?
Yeah, so this was back in the time when, as I said, essentially when I started, you had to break it to show anything but a post. Everything was done in code. So you could include some custom fields in the editor in the back end, mm-hmm. but they all had to be done through functions. You couldn't, there was nothing like ACF or anything like that. You know, you had to know what you were doing. and everything was then pulled out in the back end in its own field to pull out in the front. Everything else was done in code, absolutely everything. In fact, if you go back far enough, this was before you even had WordPress menus. You had to write a walker to go through and actually create the menus that you wanted.
Yeah. So, now this is necessary for current day WordPress users, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Ask a freelancer that started 3 years ago what a menu walker is, and they'll just look at you blank. So that was where we started. Up until recently, before page builders, let's park, I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later on, so let's park the whole page builder phenomenon just for now in Gutenberg. But up until that point, for me, the biggest single development to WordPress was actually the development of advanced custom fields. Particularly when you then had bolt-ons, things like your options pages and your repeater fields and stuff like that. Being able to include custom fields in menus as well. The development of things like Font Awesome, so that you didn't... I mean, back in the day, everything had to be a graphic. You didn't have... If it wasn't text, it was a picture. That was your option. So, the development of those tools really made WordPress become a proper content management system, rather than being a blogging platform that also hosted pages by this point. It actually made it into a CMS that you could roll a proper website out in. So for me, that was kind of the biggest turning point of the late noughties, sort of 2008, 2009, I guess, when ACF came out. That really changed the landscape for me. And then, of course, we've then had further iterations with things like Gutenberg and Beaver Builder and Elementor and all the page builders that we now use.
Yeah, because I guess there was only the custom code was the only way to, you know, add extra functionality during those days. And forget about page builders. I think there were not many WordPress plugins also at that time, right?
The repo certainly wasn't like it is now. You did have to certainly get your hands dirty. There was a time. So going back to these like code parties that we used to have, there was a time where we'd go and we'd download a plugin that sort of did something like you wanted it to do, and then you'd go and recode it to actually make it do what you really wanted it to do. So, you know, I don't know, you take it from a gallery and make it into a testimonials plugin or whatever it might be.
And now and that was. Now we say, where's your roadmap? I have a feature request.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There was nothing like that sort of 15 years ago. Absolutely nothing. So it has changed drastically. Of course, with that comes a whole load of challenges in terms of keeping things up to date, security vulnerabilities, et cetera, et cetera. And you know what? We didn't have half the security vulnerabilities back then when we were coding things ourselves than we do now. So maybe we've taken a few steps forward in some parts and a few steps back in others. But hey, that's the way development goes.
Yeah, and I think the biggest change over the period of these years has been that now we build websites faster as compared to those years. But then this has been kind of offsetted by clients' needs and requirements and feature set, which is ever growing now in the whole ecosystem, because you get thrown at so many, you know, all new fancy, you know, tools that you can, you know, add this feature, that feature. What is your take on this? Like, even though your website building has become faster, but you've got to add more features now.
Yeah, you're too right. And I think there's a core problem around anything that's open source. And this can be web development, it can be marketing, it can be SEO, it can be artwork, it can be anything else. It could be mechanics for your car. The core problem is that with the development of things like YouTube and the ease of tutorials, it's very easy for the work that we do, that we've spent years learning how to do, and we've been developing our own skill set alongside the developments in technology. It's easy for those things to seem like they're cheap and easy. And the reality is that it's only easy because we've been through these cycles of knowledge and understanding and development and reiterating on stuff, etc. So And I think that's true with what you've just said. You know, people use websites all the time, and functionality that, again, 10, 15 years ago would have been seen to be complex, we now take for granted. So you can be building a brochure website and, hey, presto, all of a sudden they decide, hey, but we want to go and sell X, Y, Z. And you can do that, right? And it's just like something that's mentioned as a passing comment in a conversation or as a... have you ever seen the show Columbo?
Nope.
The detective show. Okay, so it's like a show from the States in the 80s, and there was this detective called Columbo, and as he was walking out the door, he'd always say, "Oh, and just one more thing," and that one thing had changed the landscape of the whole conversation. And that's a bit now how the conversations with clients are going. You think you're talking about one thing, and actually, oh, we just need one more thing, and it's this over here.
Yeah, one more thing is now more popular with Apple. One more thing, we've just raised your prices. So.
Yeah, too right. One more thing. We're going to charge you the same figure, regardless of whether it's dollars or pounds. That one really hurts me.
I can feel that, because here the Apple products get like 30% more markup than the official dollar value. So it's like the prices are very high here for Apple products.
Wow. So yeah, we could go into the policies of Apple, I suppose, if you want to. That would really sidetrack from the plan. But to answer your question, really, I think innately people know a bit more about things that websites can do. They don't necessarily understand the complexities of how those things work or the consequences of having certain things in your website is going to have. So they just expect that they're going to work. You know, funnily enough, I've just had a conversation with a client this morning. Mm-hmm. about this exact thing. So about a year and a half ago, we built a website for a dancing troupe, and it was mainly so that they could publicize the events that they were going to be appearing at and that kind of thing. It wasn't complicated, it wasn't big at all. They then came to us and said, right, so we now want to be able to share resources online. So they put together like exercises, warm-up exercises and that kind of thing. So we did a couple of templates and made some downloads, and people can register their email address, get a PDF, not a problem. The conversation I had with them this morning was, so now we've done all of that, what we want to do is pay for, have a membership for certain resources, but not for other resources. I take it you're going to be able to do that in an hour or two. No, just no. So I gave them a quote, which was as skinny obviously, as I could possibly
this is
make.
LMS setup now, like we are going into more LMS setup, right?
Exactly. I tried to avoid using the acronym LMS, but yes, we went through the whole LMS learning management system setup, and how do you do pay gates and recurring billing and delivery by drip feeding content and you just name it. They wanted the world.
Whack.
And thought, yeah, no, they knew about it. They had no idea how it was going to work, and expected that we could do it in less than a morning. So you know, perfect example. People do want a lot more. They're aware of the functionality, but there's still a massive question mark.
There's a need for more functionality, but then there comes an argument. It would be a simple thing. And second would be, it will just take an hour for you, right?
Yeah, that's it, exactly. Yeah, you can do that less in the morning, can't you?
Yeah, now coming back to the WordPress ecosystem, now it's exploding. Like there's so many plugins that get introduced on daily basis. Like this is the free version. Guess what? Pro version isn't making. Just try our free version now. Their themes, like even though we don't use those Envato or ThemeForest themes, but still there are a lot of people who use it. Like we are like moves a lot of professional developers have moved away from them, and you know they use other base theme frameworks, and there's even applications, SaaS based application that connect with WordPress. Now this is all good for us, people like us who understand it, who've been into the WordPress system for quite some time now. But for a new person coming into WordPress, it's like a jungle now, like they don't know where to start.
Yeah, no, you're dead right. There's a problem. I suppose this relates to the last question as well. The crux of this problem really is that there are so many options out there that people are afraid of making decisions. And actually, just because your website can do something, or just because there's 57 themes on ThemeForest, all of which are to do with being a construction engineer or whatever it might be, doesn't mean that you have to use them. You know, I always use the adage when I'm talking to clients. You know, we run agencies. Well, I'm not in the business of trying to compete with a freelancer in their bedroom. So, you know, if you want a website built cheap, like real cheap, then actually you're talking to the wrong person. We do run a business. We try and keep our overheads low. We try and keep things, keep our prices competitive, but we're not on a race to the bottom. And I don't really want to work with people that are having that sort of discussion with me. So just bearing that in mind, you kind of get what you pay for. So if you are going to spin up a free version of WordPress on, I don't know, GoDaddy or something, or a $9.99 version of WordPress on GoDaddy, and then you're going to spend $37 on a theme from ThemeForest, and then you're going to whack the two of them together and think that you're going to have a great website. Well, I'm sorry, but you're getting what you're paying for. Come to somebody like us, yes, you're going to pay a bit more money, but you're going to get a website that works properly. You're going to get a website that loads quickly. You're going to get a website that delivers on your marketing objectives and actually works for your business rather than you trying to figure out how to shoehorn it into your business somehow. So we're kind of approaching the problem from the other end. The difficulty with that is it's going to cost you a bit more money. That's my two cents on it anyway.
Okay, now let's talk about the workflow changes. Now, how has your workflow changed over past few years, you know, building WordPress website and even, you know, interacting with clients, like the process that starts with the first contact of a client to you to actually building websites? Like, how has this journey changed for you over the period of, you know, changes in the WordPress ecosystem?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, actually. And I think where the way that WordPress has changed, and now that there is a lot more freedoms and we can build things faster, it's allowing developers to spend that time that they would have ordinarily spent building sort of static layouts to actually start solving problems for clients. So kind of the biggest change that I've seen is when I started doing this, a website was like an add-on tactic. So you'd come to an agency, they do your new logo, they do all your collateral, your letterheads, the new brochures, and then they do you a website. Or you'd be running a campaign and you wouldn't put that as a separate part of your website. You'd then run a microsite for it, which is, you know, a completely separate thing. And the website was purely a tactical kind of part of a bigger marketing plan. What's kind of happened now is, as an agency, we've been able to position ourselves to say, look, we're going to build you a great website. Don't worry about that. It's going to look great. It's going to work great. It's just going to be fantastic. No, that is a given. We know what we're doing. But actually, wouldn't it be even better if that great website altered your business? So before we start worrying about designs and logos and color palettes and this, that, and the other, tell me about your business. Tell me about the problems that you're having. And we can then figure out creatively how this website can at least address some of them. And that is not only going to mean that you're paying us X amount of pounds or dollars for a website, but it's then going to be an investment back into your business where you can say, right, this website now helps me do that. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is, again, back in the day when we had to code everything by hand, a designer would come up with a beautiful website, a beautiful picture, and then there'd be certain things, and you'd just look at it as a developer and just go, oh my life.
That's absolute positioning.
Yeah. How on earth? And then, of course, then responsive comes along, and you're just like, I mean, you've got to remember, responsive websites, whilst they've only been part of the Google algorithm for about 2 years, two, 3 years now, yeah. The code for actually making stuff responsive came maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. So having a responsive website used to be an upsell, and now it's something we just take for granted. So you'd look at these things and you think, how the heck are we going to do that? Of course, we've now got far more control. We've got far more tools in our development stack, which allow us to create these interesting, engaging, fluid, responsive layouts that will engage your customer to a conversion metric, whatever that might be for your business. So, yeah, I'm sort of rambling a little bit, but there's that's kind of how the process has changed. We then sort of, there are elements that still resemble the previous process. So, you know, we will still do you, we don't do design in the browser. It's not the way our agency sort of works particularly well, but we, you know, so we do still provide you with a concept visual and then a suite of visuals. And we sort of guide the user through that, the client, through that process. And then we build it. But that's not to say that building in the browser is wrong. It's just, that's not the way our agency works.
It's like both ways works. It depends on which way work in your system.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, besides the workflow, the main thing is tools. Like WordPress has always been there, the base, but the tools that we've been using over it has changed. I think my tool set changes every 2 years. Like I remember like 4 or 5 years ago, I would not use any other theme besides Genesis. And now I'm open to using a lot of themes, be it Astra, GeneratePress, Page Builder Framework. There's so many of, you know, good themes around which can be your base to build any kind of websites. Now, Is it like tools have become more in number, or like we are changing our perspective, or what's happening?
I don't think that they've just been packaged up a little bit differently. So like I said, you know, so the last freelance jobs I did, so we're now talking about 7 years ago. I used to be a freelancer. The last freelance jobs I did, this was before we had Beaver Builder and Elementor and Page Builder Framework and those kind of things. My dev stack back then included things like Zurb Foundation Framework. And then I had ACF on the top of that, and I had a jQuery library. Because of Zurb, it meant that I could run it through something. It wasn't Gulp back then. I forgot what it was called. Anyway, it went through a preprocessor. So that was my stack back then. And I probably had somewhere in the region of, I don't know, 15 to 20 tools within that stack. Maybe wouldn't use all of them on every website. Some of them would be used on each project, but not all of them. Fast forward 7 or 8 years, I've still probably got 15 to 20 tools, but none of them are now Zurb Foundation. None of them are, we do still use Gulp for some of our custom development and pre-processing, but none of them are kind of that restrictive. Instead, I have Beaver Builder, and I have Page Builder Framework, and I have ACF, a number of ACF things, and I have Short Pixel Optimizer. You know, so I think it's just the stack that's changed. I don't know whether it'd be really interesting to go back and see if I can dig out some old code and see how many tools I used 7 years ago and how many tools you use now.
Yeah, because tools can be an evergreen topic, and we can talk endless on it because, hey, everyone has their own preferences. Just talking about Beaver Builder and Elementor, we can spend 24 hours on it just talking about So besides, you know, obviously we've already touched on this fact that now, you know, websites are built with conversions for the business in focus. And I think another reason this could be that the clients are more informed or educated, or they do a lot of Google search now, because there are so many other resources that can actually educate a client. If you compare it like 10 years back, or maybe even 5 years back, like there's so many educational kind of a websites and blogs that teaches, sort of, you know, tells clients, hey, you're going to get a website, make sure you tick mark these things, and make sure you do bargain with your agency. They charge a lot and they're making millions of dollars.
Yeah. You know, it almost needs to be that some of the tools and services out there sort of need to ask you, are you an agency or a developer, or are you just Joe Blogs that's trying to add something to your website? Because if you're the latter, we'll still take your money from you, but we maybe need to just think about how these things are being applied. I have a client at the moment, and they're fixated about having their newsletter sign up come in a pop-up, and it has to be in a pop-up. So we put it on desktop, and I tried to explain to them, look, pop-ups don't really work so well on mobile. They get in the way. Some of the website crawlers, some of the SEO crawlers don't really like you having pop-ups on mobile. No, it has to be in a pop-up. And And it's because they have seen a brand of denim that is, I'm not going to mention the brand name, but they have world domination. And they have their newsletter sign up in a pop-up. So if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. So you've got to make it work that way. And however you try and have the discussion that, look, these people are going to get customers. It doesn't matter what they do on their website. They're not worried about SEO. They're not worried about something being in the wrong place. All they're bothered about is selling denim. And they're going to sell denim anyway because people know about them. You don't, right? If people don't find you, you won't sell anything. So therefore, we need to play a slightly different game with you. I think there's a real business case that needs to be made if you're adding something just for the sake of adding it. One of my pet hates with some of the WordPress plugins is when they will simply add like banners at either the top or bottom of your website or give you a short code so that we've built a beautiful website for a client. They can install any plugin and then put the short code in the editor and then an unstyled raw version of whatever the heck this plugin spits out just appears in the middle of my gorgeous website. I hate it.
My clients love it.
Clients, it
pops.
So I don't know whether I'm really answering your question, but I hope you're sort of getting the gist that for me.
Yeah, but even clients, there are both kind of clients. There are people who are fixated on pop-ups. There are people who are fixated on sliders. Guess what? Sliders were really popular like a few years back. Now, yep. Fortunately, that trend is going off. And I rarely get a client who would want a slider unless their main competitor has slider. And then it's difficult to convince them. Then they definitely want a slider with extra slides as compared to their competitors. So I know it can be a difficult situation to handle a few clients. So that's more of, you know, I guess they are more educated, but then this education goes both ways, the right way and the wrong way. So it depends like what kind of clients you're getting.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right with that. You're right with that. And, you know, part of the work that we do in our agency is based around SEO. We run SEO contracts for a number of clients. Mm-hmm. We have to have conversations with them about how, traditionally there's something like 512 aspects of the Google algorithm. Okay. I don't need to optimize your website for all 512 of them. I just need to know that we're doing more than the people that are in positions 1, 2, and 3 on Google, because I guarantee they're not hitting all 512. So you sometimes need to have a conversation with clients about how all of this stuff is kind of relative. And just because so-and-so over there, your competitor over there is in position 1 for Google for that search term. Andy has a slider with 8 slides in it. Well, you know what? That's going to slow his page speed down because he's got to load all 8 of those things every time the homepage gets loaded. I'm not going to put a slider on your website because you know what? That means there's 7 other things I don't need to load on your website. You just want 8 because he's got 8. And that's school ground politics. That's not playing it. That's not business. That's not a business decision. So sometimes you can have some interesting conversations with clients and they can get a bit spiky. And to be honest, they're the ones I enjoy the most.
Okay. Now, you know, there's always a buzz of, you know, big ticket custom website projects. Like, you know, everyone used to propose this, hey, get a $10,000 website project, $20,000, $30,000, get $50,000. Like this concept was pushed to every agency owner. And guess what? Every agency owner is not made to do those kind of websites. And now there's more buzz for productized website building, which is done at a lower price tag. So according to you, is website becoming more of a commodity on a cheaper side now, considering that you can build a website faster and you can turn around and do more projects within a specific period of time?
We sit on a bit of a fence with that one. About 6 weeks ago, we launched a website that was in the region of $50,000. Mm-hmm. For a client. That had some serious levels of integration with third-party applications. Mm-hmm. And essentially, it gave them, they were running a Drupal 5 site that they'd had for like seven or eight years, that didn't do any of this stuff. And we've literally picked their business up and dumped it online. And now they've got so much stuff happens automatically. They're sort of finding time in the office that they never knew they had. But that had a, there was a reason that that project cost so much money, because it was ruddy complicated and the business case for it was huge. And they had the budgets. I've got to, you know, they did have the money for it. We weren't trying to sell it to somebody that couldn't afford it. On the same note, our bread and butter comes through more localized inquiry websites. So things like the signage company. You know, we're gonna, the guy that's arguing about his pop-up, at the end of the day, you can't buy a sign. He does bespoke signs for retail outlets. So, you know, you have to go and speak to one of their designers. You have to go and speak to one of their engineers. They have to come and do a survey. You can't buy the stuff online. And so at the end of the day, it's a brochure website and it's costing far less. You know, we're talking sort of, I guess between $4,500 and $5,000 by the time you figure out the conversion. So now we probably launch 30 to 40 websites like that a year. Whereas we maybe only do two or three of the larger websites, but so they do become our sort of bread and butter, but we don't want to, as an agency, we took the decision that we didn't want to price ourselves out of the market of the everyday businessman. Because at the end of the day, that's what I am. I am just a business, you know, if you put me in a pub at the end of the day drinking a pint and I'm stood next to a plumber and an electrician and a shopkeeper and there's me, you know what, we're all the same.
Yep.
And we're all trying to create a better life for ourselves, a better life for our families. We're trying to do the right thing and do something that we love doing. And, you know, I don't want to be the agency that's going to sort of look down on those people and say, oh, well, if you can't afford my $10,000 website, then I'm not going to talk to you. So we kind of sit on the fence with that one. I think it is becoming a little bit more of a commodity, but I think if you're a savvy agency owner, you can actually use that to your advantage and say, okay, so you want a commodity website, I'll give you a commodity product. Here you go. That's what you get. You get your 5-page templates, you get one contact form, it'll do the menus for you, but it won't do anything else. You forget it. You want more than that? We can talk about it.
Awesome. So now let's talk about the future of WordPress. Now, as of now, page builders are ruling.
Yep.
We love to talk about our favorite page builder, and there are new page builders dropping here and there with lifetime deals and people asking you why the hell you did not buy it. So, and plus page builder, there's Gutenberg, which is fortunately getting better, though I still would not use it for building a website. I can use it on a post editor, which I've still not got used to. I don't know why, because there's so many clicks you have to do for certain small things. The yep. UI is kind of crazy. They've got so much money still. They didn't build something that useful. Probably by end of this year, something useful will come with Gutenberg, because they got a show off at WordCamp US in November. Yep. So that's one part of it. So what do you think about the future of WordPress? Like, are we going to continue with page builders like 2 years down the line, or Gutenberg is going to roll over them?
Gutenberg still has a hell of a distance to travel, in my opinion.
Yep.
I still use the classic editor plugin quite a lot.
Same here.
let's make it look like old WordPress. It was a lot better. Let's just get back there. I can't see a point where we will be building stuff directly in WordPress without using a third party something. The reason for that is ultimately we all know that WordPress does have security breaches. And if you start to put all of your eggs in that basket of everything being accessible through WordPress, and then the unthinkable happens and there's a hole in WordPress that we don't know about that exposes your personal data or personal data of your customers or whatever it might be, then you're going to be in hot water. And the advantage of using something like a page builder is, well, there's a couple of things. Firstly, they serialize a lot of it. So even the data they store, if somebody spits it out from a database dump somewhere, it's just going to be gobbledygook. It's not going to really make any sense. But the second thing is you're adding in that level of security that if somebody does breach your version of WordPress, if something does happen, then actually they're going to need the same tool set that you have in order to make head and tail of this thing. And the chances of that happening are very, very slim. So I personally still think from a security point of view, I think these things have a place. I don't think WordPress yet has the infrastructure. I don't think it has the UI to actually support this stuff properly. They've gone very, very minimalist with Gutenberg. And the problem with page builders are natively you have a lot of options. So I know you're more of an Elementor guy, aren't you, than a, am I right in thinking?
Beaver Builder.
No? Beaver Builder all the way, good. Beaver Builder, I think, does the best job, if I'm being perfect. Beaver Builder's my tool of choice as well. That does I think that does the best job of making the options intuitive to use and hides them away quite nicely.
Overwhelm users, like if you open Beaver Builder in, editor in one window and open Elementor, you know, Elementor is good, but it throws in so many options, it can intimidate a new user easily.
Yeah, absolutely. And overwhelm is actually a really good term for it. The other thing that really annoys me about Elementor is that it's supposed to be a WYSIWYG editor. And then they go and put a bar down the left-hand side of the screen, which naturally makes your screen a bit narrower. So it's not WYSIWYG at all, because it's WYSIWYG minus a bit. You know, I close that, and all of a sudden stuff moves again. And hang on. Yeah, anyway, I won't start.
That's controversial.
I'm going to start an argument now in your group.
Okay. So besides, you know, Gutenberg, there's another thing that's growing a lot, which is SaaS apps that connect websites, like Adam Lacy launched Split Hero. Now, basically, it's a SaaS app, but it connects with WordPress. It is for WordPress users. It is for WordPress websites. So can we expect SaaS ecosystem to grow further? Obviously, lifetime deals will come along, but the ecosystem itself.
I think that is still a massive area of growth in the WordPress ecosystem to come. I know Adam very well. And I know a bit of the backstory behind Split Hero. And ultimately, you know, what he has done with that since its early release, he has started to then see contact happen with people in the WordPress space, people in the digital marketing space. Let's lift him out of WordPress a little bit and go a bit bigger than that. That have made contact. He's really managed to make a platform that could become a game changer in the split testing environment, particularly for WordPress websites at the moment. In order for those kind of developments to happen, those developers, those companies need money. And the best way to ascertain income is to have recurring revenue. I think what we may find, I'm not going to say it's going to be a race to the bottom, but a bit like with Split Hero, you know, a lot of these SaaS apps have always been like $99 a month or $49 a month. Adam's come in cheaper than that. And I think we will see that there may be a fluctuation just to come down a little in terms of the, that's not to say that Adam's product is less valuable than theirs. He's just decided to price it a bit more keenly. I think that's a smart move, because those of us that are in this space, you know, how many subscriptions do you have for $49 a month for software, or $600 a year, whatever it might be? We all have them, and that if they stay at that point, some of us will start to get to the place where we say, you know what, we're not going to pay anymore. We've got enough tools. We don't need another $50 a month. You can forget it. So I think there may be just this suppression, just a little bit, just to bring that a bit, make it a bit more keen, in order to keep that ecosystem going. But actually, there's still so many developments, so many parts of what is good from a marketing point of view that aren't yet exposed, like Adam has done with split testing, that there's certainly scope for more of these things to come out of the woodwork. I just hope I think of one next.
That's more important, right? Okay, let's talk about your toolbox. So which are your current five favorite tools that power your online business?
Okay, so within WordPress itself, I'll give you a couple that are in WordPress and a couple that aren't.
Okay.
Within WordPress itself, we do love Beaver Builder. That is our tool of choice. And we do base all of our websites on the Page Builder framework. David Vongeries is another top bloke. And for us, it's about delivering consistency. In an agency environment, you're trying to make everything brilliant, but you want your entire portfolio to be website after website after website of seamless experience. And so we get that from that combination. So there's the WordPress, things. And then from a business side of things, my cash flow wouldn't work without Xero, which is a finance piece of software, finance SaaS app online. So we use Xero. I'm trying to think of others now, Davinda. I don't know if I could. From my podcast side of things, I love Pippa.io. That's where I host all my audio for my podcast. I couldn't be without that. And Zoom. We're now talking on Zoom. Again, you know, Zoom, I did have the free version of Zoom for a while. And you know what? After about three calls, decided that this thing was going to be so invaluable to my business that I said, here, take some money. Just give me the pro version.
Yeah, their pro version is good. But the thing is, if you use Zoom to, you know, do live streaming and all, then it tends to get expensive if you compare with other options like StreamYard and all that stuff. Because StreamYard
Go on.
Because StreamYard is also very handy if you're only doing it for live streaming.
That's true. What I tend to do with Zoom actually is, so that I have the enterprise plan, whatever sort of, I can't remember what the package is called now, but I have the enterprise plan, which is £12 a month or whatever it happens to be. And then if I need something, I will then go and buy it as a one-off rather than add it to my plan. Through the podcast, I run some workshops and webinars, for example. So what I'll do is I'll line two or three of those up within a month, and then I'll go and buy a 30-day webinar.
That's smart.
You know, so yeah, I don't have a like $120 Zoom bill. I have a £12 Zoom bill.
Because I know their live streaming, webinar thing is like $40 per month. So I guess you pay once for 1 month and then disable it for the next month.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And then if you can then line two or three up within that month, or one a week, that's another thing I can try and do.
I just got an idea from you, so thank you.
No problem at all.
Okay, so which is your recommended web hosting service? Like, do you host client websites or send them to your recommended web hosts and they sign up their own account?
No, we offer hosting for our clients, and we host all of our websites through Cloudways. There can be a bit of a mixed reaction about Cloudways Online. Personally, I've had a very good experience with them. We have found that some of their services work better than others. So we do, for example, we do spin up a lot of more Vulture servers than we do DigitalOcean now, for example. When we started, a lot of our stuff was on DigitalOcean through Cloudways. But the Vulture stuff seems to just work a bit more. It's a bit quicker, to be honest.
And the next question, recommended page builder, I guess you've already told a few times now, which is Beaver Builder.
Beaver Builder's rubbish. Don't touch that one.
Probably you like the shine of Divi and Oxys and...
No, Beaver Builder all the way.
Okay, cool. So the next, recommended email marketing service. Do you use email marketing within your business?
Yeah, we do. So for our own stuff, we use ConvertKit. To power that. I used to use Drip. I moved away from Drip. I can't honestly remember why. Anyway.
Because they changed their pricing plans and they made it really bad.
Yeah, probably. So we moved to ConvertKit. And actually, ConvertKit works really well. For our clients, a lot of our clients don't actually like ConvertKit. They see it as basically a bland text editor and wonder why we all go on about it so much. So a lot of them use Campaign Monitor, which is another tool that we...
Awesome. It is. Lastly, any upcoming service or tool that has caught your attention recently, other than those that appear on AppSumo?
There isn't really. I've sort of over the summer I've kind of had my blinkers on a little bit. So we've been we've had quite a busy summer. I'm gearing up with some of the stuff through the podcast. So I've sort of had my blinkers on when it's come to upcoming services. So you might have to go and find a jingle from somebody else to put at the end of this call. But no, I mean, if you haven't checked out Adam Lacey's Split Hero yet, go and give it a check out. It will allow you to do up to a 4-way test on any WordPress website. You can run the standard plan, I think, allows you to have up to three tests yep. running on. They can run different domains, so you can
three active, but you can have yep. unlimited stuff in there. Like you can activate three of them. I did actually demo with Adam Lacey on the podcast. We actually did a video demo, and during the video demo, I was like, "Man, this is so easy! Like, put anything complex here."
Yeah, no. So, you know, he's recently added some special stuff in for split testing with WooCommerce. That's all live now. I know that because I was talking to him earlier today. So, you know, they have a very good development schedule. And also, if you need more than three, he's only charging something daft like an extra $2 a month for yeah. Per additional campaign.
Yeah,
so you're not, you know, he's not taking the mick with the pricing at all. So, I know that's not on a special offer at the moment. You've missed the lifetime deal. Sorry about that. If you have, actually, I'm not that sorry. You should have been watching all the stuff because there was enough of us putting stuff out there that it was happening. So, but yeah, just if you haven't checked Split Hero out, go and take it.
Yeah, it's an amazing tool. So before we wrap this episode, where can people find you and what you can help people with?
So my agency is called So Digital. You can find that at so-theagency.com. My personal stuff is all on peteeverett.com. So that's the Marketing Development Podcast and the Marketing Development Academy. In terms of what I can help you with, particularly go check out the podcast. It's full of actionable marketing advice, essentially. The idea behind the podcast is that I help agency owners and I help freelancers and I help consultants demonstrate value back to their clients. So the stuff we've been talking about today about business goals, business objectives, tying your marketing into that, the techniques that you can use to do that, particular tools, or, you know, if you're a copywriter, don't worry about, you know, that it's not a geeky podcast about coding or anything like that. It does come up from time to time, but it's not about that. So it's really based around trying to help you guys demonstrate value to your clients.
Awesome. Thank you for your time. It was amazing.
Thank you for having me. And I've got to say, you know, I do, I'm not saying this because we're recording it. It is true. I do listen to stroke watch your podcast as many weeks as I can. It's in my player. So I've got two small children. So actually I listen to a lot of podcasts because it's when they're off having lessons or whatever, you can have your headphones in and listen to stuff. So yeah, thank you for keeping up the good work. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Wow. Glad to hear that. Thank you so much. And thanks for spending some time and recording this. Have a good day.
You too. Cheers.
You can join the free Web Creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.